Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. Go D-Star and go mobile with ICOM's ID880H and IC2820H. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 62. August 29th, 2012, Hurricane Party. Hi, welcome to Ham Nation, episode 62. We've got a great show for you tonight. Bob can't be here. He's on the road again. But we've got Gordo and Don and Amanda, and later we'll have Cheryl in the show. And we might even let Julian sneak in there somewhere. But looking forward to a good show, despite the fact that we're in the middle of Hurricane Isaac right now. It's just barely made it to Jackson here, and I know Don's been experiencing it all day. We'll hear a little bit about that shortly, but let's bring in our hero, Gordon West.
Okay, thanks, George. We've been monitoring 14.325. Boy, those net control operators are doing a fine job. They're very relaxed. They're not demanding the frequency. The frequency's been up for comms between those reporting in and the National Hurricane Center. So things going very well from what we hear out here on the West Coast. And in a few more minutes, Julian's going to take over the stand here. He's got some hair-raising audio and videos that I think everybody will enjoy seeing ham radio at its best. Back to you, George.
Oh, thanks, Gordon. Yeah, we've been listening to some 40-meter nets for hurricane traffic today, as well as 75-meter nets. Haven't heard a lot of excitement on there. I did hear them call for a couple of rescue situations on there where they had people trapped that needed to be evacuated, and I think all of that went okay. But let's go down now to Don, who's you're not in the eye of it, but you're pretty close, aren't you, Don?
Yeah, Picayune, Mississippi is where I live, and I'm about 50 air miles north-northeast of New Orleans. And, of course, the storm came in about 60 miles or so to the south of south-southwest, actually, of New Orleans. So I've been a good ways away from the eye, but however, we've been getting some seriously bad feeder bands here. We probably had 60, 65 mile an hour winds here at my place, and we lost one tree, a couple of shingles on the in-laws' place. I wish I could take this outside and show you, but it's dark. It seems like these things always only come in at night, but we lost power here about 12 hours ago, so I'm on generator power. And luckily, the Wi-Fi is working, and the internet, the DSL is working. So, yeah, we're doing as best we can. I just got just made a gasoline run. Actually, went up to refill the gas cans for the generator, and saw thankfully a lot of power company bucket trucks out moving around. So hopefully, we'll have power on before the estimated 2-day restoration period that we were quoted earlier. So, but there were some, as you said, some harrowing rescues, especially down in Plaquemines Parish, which is south of New Orleans, right along the Mississippi River, where you see it come in, you know, on the map as it snakes down to the Delta. Some levees apparently were overtopped, and there were 10 and 12 feet of water in some homes, and people were being rescued from their attics and from rooftops in the pre-dawn hours. This all started around 5 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, there was some harrowing rescues, and it's been a pretty stout storm for a minimal hurricane. It came in with winds of 80 miles an hour, I believe, which is a medium category one. But I was hearing some of the weather people say that the central pressure, the barometric pressure, which is one gauge of the strength of a hurricane besides just the wind speed, that they had seen hurricanes with much higher pressures. And of course, the lower the pressure, the stronger the storm. So this probably were it not for a lot of dry air being sucked into it out in the Gulf, keeping the wind speeds down, this probably would have hit as a Category 2. And once it made landfall around the mouth of the river, it just kind of wobbled around down there. And I think it's moving 6 miles an hour right now, and it's only to Baton Rouge, which Baton Rouge is 90 miles to the northwest of New Orleans. So it's only traveled that far in, 24 hours? I mean, there's a lot of rain. We're probably going to get 20 or 25 inches of rain out of this deal. So, George, back to you.
Yeah, I agree, Don. A lot of rain, more than they expected since it slowed down. I heard, actually it came on land and then backed off in the Gulf a little bit and finally came back on land again this morning. Here we're expecting, up to 12 inches of rain. They may have updated that since because it's taken a little more westerly course. But I know they've really had a lot of rain in New Orleans. Of course, nothing like Katrina, as far as damage from the winds that I'm aware of. And flooding as well. There was some flooding on the Mississippi coast, I understand. And, some, like you said, down in Plaquemine Parish and some of those folks may disagree that it's not as bad as Katrina. At least I heard one lady saying that earlier on the Weather Channel. But not nearly as severe where I am, and I don't believe in Mississippi at all. Probably not Louisiana. We've got Amanda with us also tonight. Amanda, give us an update on your status, please.
Still married, still active on Facebook, and still active in the ham world.
Oh, okay. But you're not running a marathon yet.
No. Sorry, I just had to make a joke there, you guys. Hey, Don, I hope you guys are doing okay. I'm so sorry to hear you're not without, that you are without power. And boy, I think a lot more people are suffering from this hurricane than we did in any of the fires throughout Colorado and all of our history of being Colorado. So God bless you guys. I hope you're doing all right.
Okay. Any ham tales for us tonight, or is that still kind of being postponed?
It has been postponed because I hadn't asked anybody for any stories here lately. I could tell you what we've been working on here in Colorado, and that has to do with all-star nodes and also asterisk. And I sent in a picture here to Karsten, and if he'd like to put that up, this is going to talk about our all-star system, and we call it the K0 JSC Fund System. That's Jeff, my husband. And what it is three repeaters linked all by a VOIP system similar to IRLP and Echolink. Part of what makes All-Star unique is that it's a modified version of the Asterisk PBX phone system. And Asterisk is an open source IP-based PBX system that's been around for many years. With the addition of the APP_RPT module, we're able to connect a transceiver or transmitter receiver to a USB sound card and have a very inexpensive repeater controller. The All-Star server or node acts as a repeater controller and a gateway to the All-Star system. A group of many other nodes are also there on the internet. This is really impressive, you guys, because about this system is the ability to run several nodes via private Ethernet cable networks. So you don't have to have the internet to link all of these together, but yet they're their own via VOIP system. So it's kind of its own LAN without the internet. Very awesome. And this is one of the radios used. If you guys can trying to get this right here for you. It's a Rocket M5, and it's made by Ubiquiti Systems. So we hook these to 5.8 gigahertz dishes. So they're about 2 feet, pretty big guys there. And they put them up on a couple of towers, hook up some repeaters to them, and they can all be linked via this VOIP network. So that's what Jeff K0JSC has been working on here in Canyon City. And why that is helpful is if you're 40 miles away, you can talk on the same repeater system that somebody 40 miles away is talking on as well. So works out very nicely, and you don't use as many coordinated frequencies that way. So that's what we're doing here in Colorado right now, George.
Interesting stuff. I'm a little bit familiar with that system, but not very. I've got to look more into it. But All-Star sounds like a great thing. Gordon, let's bring in Julian there and talk a little bit more about the weather here. I think he's got something for us, doesn't he?
Yeah, in fact, I do, George, and thank you. And it's good to see everybody safe and sound so far. John, if you want to run video or clip number four, here we can see some of the information of, is available on the web just by searching for some of the moving maps in this video that hopefully will come up in just a second. There we go. We can see Katrina just as it's about to make landfall. Not Katrina, excuse me, Isaac. As it's about to make landfall. This was at about 2 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. So if we can now go over to video five, we get a little close up of actually of it hitting Louisiana right here. And during this time, as I'm recording this video, I actually got on the air on the Echolink node and was talking to Heather. Heather Glass, K6HEY, who used to work with ADI, the radio company, and gave her a little chance to tell us what she was doing in preparation for sheltering in place. She was not going to evacuate. So, John, if you can show the tropical storm video. Okay, there we go.
Okay, Heather, K6HEY, this is N3JF. You're up there in Louisiana, so why don't you tell me what's going on?
All right, well, thank you, Julian. Yes, K6HEY here in Broadmoor, the heart of New Orleans, Louisiana. We are bunkered down for shelter in place for currently Tropical Storm Isaac, but very likely to make landfall sometime during the day or evening tomorrow as a potentially Category 1, possibly strong Category 1 or better hurricane. We are in my home prepared for about 5 to 7 days without power. Next door where my mother lives, they are prepared for about 14 to 20 days without power or outside availability for food. We do have everything ready and prepared here on our block. Most of my neighbors are very prepared with more than what's been televised as being sold out in most of our grocery stores. Everybody I do know is well stocked with water, food provisions, ways out after the storm, but before something else happens, as did nearly 7 years ago today, actually 7 years ago on Wednesday. If need be, about 5 hours from now, I may get a call to go down to the EOC with either the search team or possibly evacuee. Who knows who calls me first, but I am definitely ready, willing, and able. Also, it's been a little more than a decade since I've been in an active EOC, and I'm extremely excited to hop back into it. K6HEY.
All right, Heather, thank you. And can you describe a little bit about what you may have in your go bag or your bug-out bag in these kind of situations? Go ahead.
Well, for my bug-out bag, it's basically, for this event, it is a rescue-after-the-fact bag. So what I have packed is a very small duffel bag, about the size of a large purse, and it has 3 changes of clothes for daytime, 2 sets of pajamas. Of course, I did not pack shoes. They're bulky. They take up a lot of room, and I intend to leave with a nice, sturdy pair of tennis shoes on my feet. What I do have, however, separately from that bag that is pre-packed, ready to go in the event we do need to be again, post-event rescued or evacuated. I also have arranged on my dining table all emergency supplies, all of my candles, my flashlights, my gas and water key crowbar, all on the dining table so that in the event I wake up and the electricity is out or I wake up to electricity going out while it's already dark, either tonight or tomorrow night, I know exactly how to get where I'm going to have every supply I need. The freezer is stocked with frozen gallon Ziplocs of water to help keep it cold longer. Most of my food that is prepared is shelf stable, and I intend to keep it that way. I have pre-cooked beans and rice, things that will keep well and don't need a whole lot of extra seasoning. So definitely ready to sit here for up to a week or, you know, get out of Dodge if waters start rising.
All right, Heather. Well, we hope it doesn't come to that, and we hope to hear from you after the event. So we'll catch you here on the KB5AVY repeater via Echo Link and via emails and telephone calls and texts and whatever we can do. There are some linked repeaters that we can also keep in contact on. So looking forward to that. So wish you and Teresa stay safe, and we'll talk to you again every couple of hours between now and when the all clear is sounded. So K6HEY, Heather, thank you very much, and 3JF.
Kept on a schedule for every couple of hours. Of course, she went to sleep a few times. She's doing fine. She lost electricity several times throughout the night, and apparently it's all back on. So some of the social media also came into effect also with Twitter and Facebook updates. And I had phone numbers for her family and friends outside of the area too. So we pretty much had everything covered. So that was good. One last thing, just as they were shutting down the net on Echolink, was a little emergency system that occurred, and if John, you can play number 11. We'll just give that a few seconds.
So what was the call sign again, over? All right, it's N5UOA. Let me know when you're ready to copy.
N5UOA, he's on a repeater. You better give. You have to give it on voice only.
Yeah, I know. Can you? Are you ready to copy a message? I need you to give this to the authorities for a possible rescue. I've got a Twitter message that came across, and it went to the TV station, but I don't know if they've picked it up or not. Can you copy a rescue situation for me, over?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. I'm ready to copy. This is KB5, and you are. Go ahead.
Okay. 7 children. I repeat, 7 children. Plus 8 adults trapped in high water.
All right. So basically, you can hear the Echolink system was actually being used to forward tweets from Twitter to get a whole bunch of people rescued. They were up in water up to their shoulders and were evacuating up into higher ground. And I'm pleased to say that, as it was later reported, the rescue actually went very well. So with that, I'll pass it back to George, and then I know that Gordo has something to say on this matter also. Back to you, George.
Okay, Julian, great report there. And, we're still in the middle of it here, although I think the worst is past, but there's going to be a lot of flooding down in South Louisiana, probably all across Louisiana and parts of Mississippi. And Gordon, Bob really doesn't like antenna tuners, but he's out of town this week, and I think we can talk about those whenever you're ready.
Well, we're ready now. And, antenna tuners are what many hams had to turn to this morning after they discovered that their tower and their big beam antenna or their well-placed cubicle quad came down in the hurricane last night. And we talked to several folks, and a lot of folks have the manual MFJ tuners. And I just wanted to quickly go over with everyone how relatively easy it is to tune up an unknown antenna. And we've hooked into a dipole antenna I have that is not resonant, very similar to the dipole non-resonant antennas that they're using right now in New Orleans to get back on the air. We'd like to feed it with ladder line, but we don't, so we have coax cable, but the run is not very long. There will be SWR after the tuner up to the non-resonant antenna. But here's the question. How do you tune the tuner? Well, first we add the volume, and you hear that coming from the ICOM transceiver here. And now I'm going to take both outside knobs and move them straight up and down. These are the capacity knobs that tune the capacity. Then I'm going to come down here to the inductor knob, and by listening to this background noise, I'm going to get off that carrier. There we go. I'm going to tune it until you hear the noise begin to come up. Here we go. Listen carefully. Better, better, better. That's it. This is the sweet spot. Not here. You get the idea. So what we've done now is we've adjusted the control knob controlling inductance for maximum received signal. Now I'm going to adjust the two capacity knobs. And I do that quickly. Hear them come up? I have now preset that antenna tuner for being able to transmit and receive on this particular band. Right now, we're up at 7266, and there's somebody there, so I'm going to drop down to 7209. And then I'm going to, ensuring that there's no one on frequency that I would accidentally cover up, I'm going to go to AM, and I'm going to transmit, and I'm going to bring the SWR down. And you'll see that on this needle right here. Here we go, AM transmitting, and there's the dip of one SWR. There's the dip again. And if we take a look now and look at the actual transceiver, and there we go, you'll actually see where the SWR will all of a sudden, I'm sorry it's out of focus, but if you were right here, you would see the SWR shooting up and down as I fine-tune this antenna tuner. So it points out that an antenna tuner can be first preset by doing it on receive audio, and you can hear the difference. And once we go to single sideband, lower sideband, and start transmitting, this tuner is resonant, and it's going to cause the radio to put out full power and jam 100 watts into both the coax that'll probably radiate, but more important, that antenna that's left after the hurricane. So don't discount the manual tuners. Don't rely on them every day, but know how to adjust them by noise first. Never transmit and click, click, click this knob, or else you'll burn the little contacts. So peak for noise, then go to transmit. Dip for minimum SWR. Shouldn't have to do much after that. If you peak for noise, and then you'll be ready to squeak a good signal 100 watts out on the air. So, George, I agree. We don't want to use the antenna tuner much, but sometimes the SWR on a downed antenna is too high where the transceivers build in automatic tuner to compensate for it. So that's where the manual tuner can sometimes just jam a signal in and be able to get 100 watts out somewhere that someone's going to hear in an emergency. Okay, George, there is our lesson 101 on manual antenna tuners.
That's great stuff, Gordo. And don't tell Bob, but I do use a tuner quite frequently. In such a situation here that my antennas are somewhat compromised, but they do work pretty decent, especially when you tune them so that the rig's not got all that reflected power on it. And speaking of Bob, he visited the Joplin Hamfest this year, and it's really come back good. So, John, if you've got the video there, let's take a look at Bob's trip to Joplin.
Saturday, I attended the Joplin Hamfest, and I'm happy to report that everything is alive and well in Joplin, over a year and a half after that disastrous tornado. There were hundreds of guys came from many states around to attend the Hamfest. And there, of course, were several dealers there, came with a lot of parts and radios. Don came in from Flex Radio, showing their new technology. But Hamfest, to me, are all about friends, meeting friends, some you've talked to for years and have never met personally. You get to see them, you get to share some ideas, you get to see a lot of other friends that you've known for years, talk to almost daily perhaps. So it was great to see some of these people and meet new friends at the Joplin Hamfest. But of course, Hamfests are all about gear. There were radios, old classic AM radios, of course, many receivers for AM and sideband. There was even a sideband adapter that you could take your old AM receiver and allow it to receive single sideband, that new thing that happened back in the 50s. AM transmitters. There was one of West Shum's Central Electronics 20A, the first single sideband transmitter. Johnson transmitters, and there were a lot of transceivers, of course, 520s, 820s, all of that. But you had to have tubes, of course, and every Hamfest have a lot of tubes that you can buy. Have to have those. Amplifiers, there's audio amplifiers. There were small RF amplifiers, and there were some big RF amplifiers. But then there were some historic things. There was an ART-13 there, one of the very same radios it's on board, Fifi, that we saw here on the show a few weeks ago. And Al Gallo had one of the 458 transmitters there that they use for intercommunications. A lot of classic radios. You can always find classic transmitters and receivers. And here was a Yaesu, one of the very first Yaesus. And W0HRO brought his HT32 beautifully restored. But, of course, we could always go home with a classic old telephone if we needed to call home. It was fun in Joplin. I hope you all get to attend the Joplin Hamfest next year. From Joplin, Missouri, this is Bob Heil, K9EID.
Well, that really did look like a good ham fest there. I didn't realize that the Joplin Ham Fest would be quite that large. And I saw several things there that I'd really like to have. You know, ICOM's a sponsor here on Ham Nation now. We're really proud to have them along. And they're running some contests with us as well. And we'll be talking about those a little bit here shortly. But right now, we've got Leo with an important message.
Hello, hams.
Hello, hams. How are you, Gordo, Bill, Amanda, George? How's the soldering going, huh? I'm actually, and everybody should do this, like Smoke and Solder on Facebook. George has a great Smoke and Solder page on Facebook, and I follow it all the time. It's great. Time to tell you a little bit about our sponsor, our great sponsor. We love ICOM. I first got to know ICOM, of course, when Ray Novak came here and set up the Twit Brickhouse Ham Shack. He just did a great job. And ICOM has just been knocking it out of the park. They were one of the first companies to work on D-Star. Do you know about D-Star? I really got excited about D-Star because it combines amateur radio with the stuff that I'm also really interested in, digital technology and so forth. ICOM has two really great D-Star radios. The one for kind of, as you're getting into this, ID880H, for if you're new to D-Star, this is a great entry-level radio. VHF, UHF dual band, of course. One band at a time. It's got a very easy-to-use band switching system, great menu structure. It's very easy to program. Big display, backlit buttons, everything you're looking for. Lots of memory, too. 1,052 channels. That's enough, I think. Probably enough. Fast multiple scanning for maximum reception. They offer a software for programming it online, which makes it very easy. You connect it up via USB, and it's so simple to program it. That is such a nice feature. And then the 2820, which is the D-Star radio I have. I've detached the faceplate. I love this magnetic faceplate. And this is a super, super D-Star radio. Almost all VHF and UHF bands available. True dual watch receiver capability, so you can monitor both bands, two bands simultaneously, including within a single band. Dedicated function button to call up assigned functions on the display. You can see right down here. Very nice interface, large adjustable LCD. And when you get the optional UT123 unit, you get the GPS receiver as well as it becomes D-Star ready with a built-in GPS receiver. Features practically multiply with DV mode and GPS, GPS alarm and location tracking. This is a great mobile. I mean, we use this in the brick house, but it's a great mobile. I wanted to have D-Star capability, so I have the ICOM HF, the big HF transmitter receiver. I also have the Moon Bounce microwave transmitter receiver, but this 2820 is so cool. ICOM really backs D-Star, and they've got lots of D-Star options for hams of all experience levels. So check it out. They are having a big D-Star QSO party coming up September 21st through the 23rd. You want to get one of these radios in time, you can check that out at ICOM's website, icomamerica.com/QSO Party 2012, all one word, icomamerica.com/hamnation, if you want to get in the weekly drawing for the ICOM radios that they're giving away. And congratulations. Oh, I should go check the ICOM winners. I like to check. Every week we've got three new winners. So let me go there. ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. All one word. Register now for your chance to win free swag. Last week's winners. Week 4, episode 61 winners. Tony G. KJ6UFG, JH, KC2TCM, and Laurent TW0MM. They both, or all three, won an IC2300H. Wow, radio. That's nice. That is nice. Register to win. Wow. I guess I'm not eligible. Oh, well. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. And thank you so much, ICOM, for your support of the Twit Brick House, our ham shack here, and Ham Nation in general. ICOM is a great, great contributor to the amateur radio community here and all over the world. Now back to you, Bob, Gordo, George. Take it away.
You know, Leo, I use an ID880H myself here for D-Star. It's a nice rig. And I think Julian's got some ICOM D-Star rigs out there at Gordo's shack as well.
Oh, yeah. We yanked these out of Julian's car. And it was easy to yank out because, as Leo was saying, the head on this particular unit is magnetic. Look at this. Just pops right off. And Julian is big time on D-Star. I'm pretty good on D-Star, but he knows how to do all the button pushing. But, you know, Leo was absolutely correct. This is the easiest radio that even I can program repeaters in it, George. So you're right. Great gear. And Julian and I and Hannah, we use it a whole bunch to stay in touch. Back to you, George.
Yeah, those are great radios, Gordon. And the one thing I really like about them, you can program them yourself manually, or you can use a computer and program them, or you can have one of your buddies in the area just send you his programming and load it straight into your radio and you're ready to go.
That's so, a way.
Was a big benefit for me because I was brand new to D-Star. Don, I think you've got some news line for us. Do you want to kind of introduce a segment?
This is Amateur Radio News Line for the current edition. I forget which number it is. I don't have that in front of me, but let's go ahead and roll it.
From Amateur Radio News Line Report number 1828, here are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 29th, 2012. The FCC has released its long-awaited report to Congress into the uses and capabilities of amateur radio service communications in emergencies and disaster relief operations. It also delves into the existence of impediments to this aspect of personal communications. But don't look for congressional action to override private land use restrictions, more commonly known as conditions, covenants, and restrictions, or CC&Rs, even if hams believe that these restrictions hamper them in times of emergencies. This is because, in its view, such restrictions do not constitute a significant impediment to ham radio or those in the United States amateur radio service. In its report, the FCC noted that some of what it calls commenters recommended that CC&Rs be preempted if they prohibit antennas that are within certain limits. Others suggest that private land use restrictions on amateur antennas should be permitted only for safety considerations and not for aesthetic reasons. However, another group believes that it is not necessary to preempt private land use restrictions in order to promote amateur emergency communications. This given the ways that even amateurs subject to CC&Rs can communicate effectively and the nature of amateur emergency communications. In relation to other impediments, the Commission says that it has already preempted state and local regulations that do not reasonably accommodate amateur radio communications and do not represent the minimum practicable regulations to accomplish the local authority's legitimate purpose. The Commission says that it has also addressed regulations regarding possession and operation of amateur radio equipment while driving. These are state and local laws that prohibit cellular telephone and texting devices that are many times very broadly written as to catch hams, CB operators, and even commercial radio users in a confusing maze of legal webs. And as to any FCC rules that may be an impediment to the various technical aspects of enhanced, read that as digital, amateur service emergency communications, the FCC believes that these matters can be considered through the Commission's rulemaking process. It does not believe that congressional action is necessary to address that issue either. On the other side of the coin, the FCC notes that the ham radio community and the emergency response and disaster communications communities all agree that amateur radio can be of great value in emergency response situations. The regulatory agency notes that amateur radio carries with it a wide range of advantages that allow it to supplement other emergency communications activities during disasters. This, says the FCC, has been demonstrated time and time again in a wide variety of emergency and disaster situations, including Hurricane Katrina. And a side note, today is the 7th anniversary of the landfall of Hurricane Katrina along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And we're prepping for another one. There's a lot more on the report that we can cover here, so go to the URL in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report, and you can download the entire 15-page document for yourself. It is a very worthwhile read. Ham Radio has lost one of its most ardent supporters with the untimely passing of QST managing editor Joel Kleinman, N1BKE, who died in a house fire on Saturday, August 18th. Joel Kleinman had been the managing editor for the American Radio Relay League's QST magazine since 2001, but his history with the ARRL goes all the way back to 1976 when he was hired by the organization to target young people with science and amateur satellites. Kleinman was the former president of the Newington Amateur Radio League and a former member of the Quarter Century Wireless Association. QST editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, called Kleinman the quiet man behind the scenes, shouldering much of the burden that comes with creating 164 pages of new content every month. Joel set a high standard for all who may follow him. ARRL President Kay Craigie, N3KN, issued a statement, "With the passing of Joel Kleinman, N1BKE, we have lost not only a respected professional colleague, but also a friend. Our hearts and prayers go out to the Kleinman family on this very tragic loss." And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
You know, Don, I think a lot of hams.
And there you have it.
I think a lot of hams are going to be disappointed with that FCC ruling there. They didn't step in and take on the Homeowners Association like everyone was wishing they would.
No, it's actually, I think it's going to turn out to be much ado about nothing. There really wasn't much of substance in there that hams could hang their hats on. It was I read it and I wasn't real thrilled with any of it. So business as usual, you know, you got to put your antennas up somehow. And, the main thing with the CCNRs, they said, is that plenty of hams out there now who are making great contacts with attic antennas or with hidden antennas or stealth antennas, and that they didn't feel the need to go against all that and open up that can of worms. So there you go. That's, you can look at it one way is, they're not standing behind us. You can look at it as another way is it's a testament to just how good we are at getting a signal out, George.
Well, that's a good political way to put it, Don. Kind of straddle the fence on it, which I think is what they did. It would have been nice if they would have stepped in and done something about that, but to be honest, I really didn't think they would or could. So business as usual, as you say. Well, this week on Smoking Solder, I'm going to show you how to put on a type-in connector. We've done PL259s before. The type-in is a little more difficult. So, John, let's roll the video and have a look. Finally, after much looking, I found coaxial relays at the Huntsville Ham Fest. And I've been needing these for about 3 years now for a 6-meter amp project that I've been working on. The larger of the two relays I'm going to use for the output of the amplifier, and it has type-in connectors on it. I didn't have any type-ins, and they're kind of expensive, so I took the cheapskate route out and bought 3 used ones, and I've desoldered them now and got them ready to go. So I'm going to show you how I put on type-in connectors. It's not the way everyone does it, but it's the smoke and solder method. So I'll begin by putting a fair-sized chisel tip in my iron so I can get enough heat onto the braid. Let's look inside the connector and see how it goes together. We'll take the nut off the back, and we'll flip this over. And the first thing we see is the little ring that goes inside that our shield goes up against. It fits down into the connector first, and there's a little rubber washer on the back of it. On top of that goes a thin metal washer that prevents the nut from pinching the rubber. Now, this all goes down inside the connector body, and the nut sits on top. Now, I've got some RG213 here from Wireman that I'm going to use. This is a real good cable with a thick shield and a metal foil shield as well. Now, we need to determine how much of the jacket and shield needs to be cut back from this. I'm going to use a utility knife for the job, and I'll hold the connector up here beside the wire, and I'm going to measure off and cut off just a little bit more than I think I actually need to. Now, I'll take a pair of pliers and twist around on the jacket just a little bit and pull it off. Now we need to do something really important, and that's slide the nut down the cable in the proper direction. And on top of that, we're going to slide down the little thin metal washer. And on top of that, we'll slide down the little rubber washer. Now we'll put the ring inside the connector, and the sharp end of it will go toward the rubber washer. And the other end is kind of rounded off on the edges. We'll slide that down on the cable here, and we'll find out that it'll only go until it reaches the jacket. The next thing we'll do is pull the braid down over the ring and try to get it good and even all the way around. Now I'll take a tweaker. Analog circuit boards often have small potentiometers and other components on them that are used to calibrate or adjust the board as a service procedure. The small insulated screwdriver used to turn them is often called a tweaker. And use that to push the braid down into the groove around the ring. Now, at this point, many people would just trim off the excess braid and assemble the connector. However, I like a little more strength, so I'll tend that braid and get it good and flat all the way around. Of course, I'll start out with some solder flux paste and put a little thin layer of that, and then tend the braid, being careful not to leave any lumps that are going to make the connector hard to assemble. Next, I'll take a single-edge razor blade and a pair of small diagonal cutters and cut away the excess shield. Now I'll go back to the soldering iron and just kind of touch up our tinning job there to get it good and flat. Now I'll inspect it from the end of the cable, and I see that none of the shield is hanging over the edges, and it looks good and solid all the way around. So the next thing we need to do is to trim off the insulation here from around the center conductor. Now I'll use a utility knife to do this, and I'm careful that I don't nick the center conductor in the process and weaken it. After I've cut all the way around, I'll use a pair of pliers and gently twist it and then pull off. Now, I can't tell you exactly how much of that center insulation you need to leave sticking up, because that's going to vary depending on your connector. On this one, I need to leave just a little bit sticking up above the end of the ring, and I think that's generally the case. Now we need to cut the center conductor to the length that it needs to be to fit up inside the pin, so we'll hold the pin up there and get a good idea of how much we need to trim back. Now I'll take the pin and slide it over the center conductor, and then we'll take a little solder and put down in the hole on the side of the pin, being careful that we don't get solder on the outside of the pin here, making it hard to go into the connector. Now we'll slide the nut and everything else down the cable up to the bottom there, and we'll put the connector over this assembly. And we'll use a pair of pliers or wrenches or whatever we have so that we can tighten this assembly. Now, if we inspect the connector looking at the end, we'll see that the center pin should come up and be the same height as the rest of the connector. We don't want it too short, and we certainly don't want it sticking out because it will destroy the female connector that we plug it into. So there you have it, how to put on a type-in connector. And now go do your own. They're not that difficult. Just takes a little practice. And my biggest tip there is hold the connector up beside the cable to kind of gauge how much of the wire you need to strip where if you don't have instructions on that. Some connectors come packaged with the instructions printed on there. Used ones don't, unfortunately. Now, we've got several kit buildings going on here. Number one was the EtherKit 30-meter open beacon kit. Now, that little kit is, it's been out of stock. I just found out last week we were supposed to start building it this week. They ran out of stock. I contacted the manufacturer. They got some more back in stock like a day or two ago, and I saw someone on the chat room say just a moment ago they're out of stock again. So, way to go, Smoke and Solder fans. Get your kits. We're going to hold off on building these. We're going to start September 12th. So you still have a little time in which to order your kit. And this is going to be a lot of fun. I noticed some people were asking, what is a 30-meter beacon? A beacon is just a little low-power transmitter that you put on the air, and it sends a CWID. This one also does several other modes, Hellscriber. I can't remember all the modes right now, but it's on the website at etherkit.com. You can learn more about it. and build along with us. This is going to be a lot of fun. There's some little toroid coils in there that we'll wind, and we'll go through all the steps and see that you get your kit built right. Now, the next thing that I'm going to build after that is this MFJ 4-to-1 Ballon kit. This is a kit they developed just for smoking solder and Ham Nation. It's got the coil in there, or actually the toroid in there that will wind the coil around, the hardware you need, the PVC pipe that we'll build it inside of, and you can get that from MFJ Enterprises. There's a link right there where you can order it. And the last kit that I've got lined up currently, and this will be a little bit in the future yet, they do have stock on these, and this is the SoftRock RXTX Ensemble. It's a software-defined radio transceiver. In other words, it's a receiver and a transmitter both. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's a little more advanced, and if it's your first-time kit builder, you probably don't want to try it. If you've got any experience at all in soldering, though, you can probably do this. There are some surface mount components on it. I'm going to show you the way that I do that. You should be able to do it. There's quite a few parts in here. So, like I say, it's not a first-time kit builder's dream, but with a little experience, you could probably jump right in and build this one. And you can get that at 5-dash.com. Now, on to the contest. You know, ICOM's having that weekly drawing on their website at icomamerica.com/en/hamnation. Go on there and sign up, and you've got the opportunity on there to tell us what you like and don't like about Ham Nation and kind of guide us along and help us to produce the shows that you'd like to see. They're also giving away swag on there. So, hey, doesn't cost anything. Go register and, you know, support ICOM because they support Ham Nation. And we have another big contest that's running with ICOM right now that many of you are familiar with. It's the ICOM Smoke and Solder Mobile Installation Contest. We have a Facebook group called Smoke and Solder. Go on there, sign up. Unfortunately, if you haven't done so already, today or midnight tonight is the last that you can post an entry on there. What we're asking people to do is go on the group, create an album, and post photos of your mobile installation there. And we're having viewers like the different albums there. And depending on, you know, who gets the most likes, we're looking for the best or the most unique or most innovative installations. Ray and I will go through all the albums in the next couple of days. And hopefully by this weekend, we'll have a poll posted at the Facebook Smoke and Solder group where you can go and there'll be the top 10 entries there. And you can vote on whichever one you prefer. And that person is going to win one of these. That's right. It's the ICOM IC7000 HF, VHF, UHF, all-mode rig. A great little rig that, boy, it's, I don't know, it's heads and above everything else that's out there in a mobile rig. And it would make a nice base rig as well. So visit the Smoke and Solder group at Facebook.com and enter the contest if you can get your pictures in by midnight. If not, at least go on there and see some of the great installations. There's some fantastic installations on there, stuff I would not have believed when we started the contest. But it's worth having a look at. You'll get some good ideas off of there as well. Now, last week, you know, we gave away a Diamond X50A antenna, and we appreciate the folks at Diamond giving us that antenna to give away. And that went to, who did that go to? Well, I've got the wrong paper here. That went to Brian, K-I-6-E-R-R. And thanks, Brian. You should probably be receiving the antenna the next day or so. It's already shipped out. But with everything else going on, I failed to give a question out for a contest for this week. So I don't have anything to give away in our regular contest this week. However, I've got a great prize for next week, and that's going to be this ARRL antenna book. It's got, wow, almost everything you'd want to know about antennas in there. It comes with the CD-ROM version as well, and there's some antenna building programs on there that'll help you out. A great resource from the ARRL. And if you think you could use this, I've got a simple question. And I want you to mail your answers to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And the question is, what is a hell box? Gordo, do you know what a hell box is?
Is that with two L's, hell box?
Yes, two L's.
No, I don't have a clue. That one went right over my pea brain.
Well, I bet somebody out there knows, and they're going to get this great book. What was that, Don?
I said I have a response, but it's not related to ham radio at all, so you probably don't want to hear it.
Well, there is really such a thing. I learned about it in college, so and it's not a college prank. It's, you know, something to do with electronics or other hobbies. So anyway, that's our contest, and boy, that was a mouthful, but I think I got it all out right this week. Cheryl should be with us now, and she's been monitoring the chat room. Cheryl, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, George. I am doing just fine. Hi, everyone out there in the Twit TV land. Hi, everyone into the chat room, too. Hello, Gordo. Hello to Don. And hi, Amanda, if you're still listening out there. I do have some things I wanted to talk about here. And some of them are actually directed to you, George. So Randy, in for RMT, he says, hey, George. What were end connectors made for? For what reason? You know, I thought it might have been a military connector. Is that true, or what do you got on that, George?
I don't know if it was made for the military or not, but they are better at higher frequencies than, say, a PL-259. You know, another name for PL-259 is a UHF connector. However, a type N works much better at those frequencies. Gordo, can you shed any more light on that?
Well, the nice thing about the N connector is it's exactly 50 ohms if put together properly like you did tonight, whereas the PL-259 may be a slight impedance bump. And the neat thing about an N connector, as long as you don't forget that little rubber doodad that goes in the hell box. That's something else. Anyway, as long as you get the little rubber doodad that goes on the cable, it is relatively water resistant. Not submersible, but it will resist water better than a PL-259.
And I think the N in N connector stands for Navy, if I'm not mistaken. So that is a military connector from what I've read. So check on that. But I think that's right. Navy is what that stands for.
Okay, great. Excellent. I believe that to be a correct answer I'm hearing from LPK in the background here. So also regarding the N-type connector is one more thing from a Web7416 person in the chat room. He says he uses a N-type crimp-on connector, and he puts that with an RG214 feed line. So he says it works great, a lot less work, and much faster to make, but I don't know if the quality is quite the same as something that you're going to solder. So, George, once again, I'm going to come to you with that for a final on the N-connector subject tonight.
Well, I believe that the crimp-on type N-connectors are a good choice. They're certainly a whole lot easier to put on. However, you don't want to buy a used crimp-on connector of any type.
Okay, thanks for that. Very good. It looks like that AG6HE, Dennis, he did want to, I did give him the etherkit.com website that you mentioned a little bit earlier, but he says on the website it really didn't tell so much about what that open beacon can be used for. Is there any other things that kit can actually, the open beacon, be used for, George?
Well, you know, a beacon is just a generally a small low-power transmitter that you put on the air to kind of help determine propagation. Like this one, after I build it here, I'm going to put it on the air, and I'm not sure what mode I'll put it on, if it'll be CW, Hellscriber, or one of the other modes that it supports. This particular kit, you can plug it into a computer with a USB port, program it up with the message that you want it to transmit, and then you can unplug it to the computer and it'll operate standalone. It's low power, so it'll run off a battery. I'm going to just put it up on the air and leave it there for a period of time. And I'll just ask viewers, you know, to send me an email and let me know if they heard it. And what that'll do is let us know in different parts of the country, you know, how the propagation was at that particular time, whether or not they heard the beacon. And, you know, that's the primary, you know, purpose of a beacon. It's just something you throw out there and people see if they can hear it. Now, you know, the airports and all use beacons for aircrafts, and there's other uses for them. But generally, it's just to put a signal out there so that it can be heard. And, Gordo, anything you can add to that?
No, beacons are terrific for propagation, and our best beacon out here on the West Coast is the series of VHF and UHF beacons on Mauna Loa volcano in Hawaii, and we hear the 2-meter and the 440 beacons coming through quite regularly during the summer months, but we would never know that the band is open if it weren't for those propagation beacons. Back to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, another thing that I'm thinking a beacon is used for is a ham radio game. We did that with the North Shore Radio Club this past summer at one of the meetings. We had a fox hunt, and that uses a beacon, I believe, also at some level, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Type of beacon.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And some D-Star information here that they were talking about. N5ASH Skeeter, he had a question. Is a D-Star radio of any use in an area where there are no D-Star repeaters? And, of course, a lot of people like to jump in the chat room and answer some of the things, too. So I want to bring back Michael, VK5ZEA. He says, use a DVAP dongle or build up a hotspot with a GMSK modem with a surplus FM radio. There's some other choices there. And, you know, you can actually the ICOM 2820H is a great D-Star radio. And I've always used it through a gateway, which I had to be registered for. But, you know, for the most part, I think you just connect all over the place. You don't have to have something in the area. It's just totally fed all over the place. And if you could please shed some light on that for us, Gordo, I think you're probably a D-Star guy, aren't you?
I got it. Let me get a chair here. There we go. Basically, what you need to do to get out on D-Star is register on the gateway, then get your radio, and then actually the radio will do everything for you, provided you know the frequency that the repeater is on. What I do recommend is people go to the YouTube, go to YouTube on the web and sign or subscribe to the ICOM America YouTube channel. And there are several videos up there which show you just how easy it is to get up on D-Star. And I know how good those videos are because I had something to do with them. So, again, go to YouTube, look, do the search feature, look for ICOM America, go look on their channel, and you'll see how easy D-Star is. It's, as their saying is, it's different but not difficult. Back to you.
Hey, you know, thanks for that answer there, Julian. I appreciate that. Another thing that you might want to just check out, the www.ns9rc.org, and go in there. There's some basic D-Star information and a pull-down menu. That's one of the organizations I belong to, but there's some basic stuff in there for programming it. And I learned how to actually do the programming myself with the, you know, the special cable and the software. I don't think I could handle any front panel programming. There's not even a way that I could possibly think about doing that. And a couple more things I wanted to just share. It was like a couple weeks ago. I just wanted to follow up with RC777. He said, hey, Cheryl, what mic are you guys using? And here I have, of course, the Heil PR40, which has a very nice resonant sound to it all over. I'm not sure. Is that everybody else has? I think we all use the PR40. I'm not sure. Does Amanda use something different? Do you know that, Gordo?
Hers is pink. Doesn't she have a pink? Yeah, she's got a pink radio microphone. We're using the same mic, but we're going through the Alesis mixer. And the Alesis mixer allows us to add bass or more treble. So we do have a little bit of equalization on the PR40. How about you, George?
I'm actually using a PR30 here. It looks similar, but you can tell it's different because it tapers down a little bit here toward the end of it. It's a very similar microphone. I think the PR40 has maybe just a hair more low end to it, but with my voice, I don't need that extra low end. It would probably just make it muddy. So Bob picked this out for me, and I'm just thinking he knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah, it sounds really good there, George. And there was something else I just wanted to share because people said, can you listen on the radio without a license? And there was a couple people in the chat room that referenced radio reference allows you to listen to ham radio or any kind of radio, I believe, without a license. And one other one was globaltuners.com. You can listen to real radio. So there's some other thoughts of you for you guys. Just in case you aren't a ham just yet, but that might inspire you to become one too, so we can talk to you on the air. So anything else that you wanted to add there, Gordo? Over to you.
Roger on that. And that's a good looking microphone that Don has emblazoned on his right shoulder. Yeah, good job.
Yeah, I have two PR40s. This one is a little bit flat, though.
Yes, indeed. All right. Amateur radio operators holding a license certainly can go in there and buy gear, and so may non-licensed hams, as long as they don't transmit. Perfectly okay to get the radio before. And we always recommend get started with a dual band 2 meter 440 because even though you're going to explore some of the higher bands and some of the more advanced modes such as D-Star and Echolink and IRLP and some of the other digital modes, you need to find a local club and you'll find them first on 2 meters and 440. So new hams or hams to be, get a dual bander. Don't transmit, but do a lot of listening. Scan up and down the band, and you'll hear some local signals. And probably they'll invite you over the air as a general announcement when the next club meeting's going to be. Back to you, Cheryl.
That's a great idea, Gordo. Thank you for that answer. Perfect. I agree wholeheartedly there. Well, I just want to thank everyone for your great questions. And they were very interesting and hope to see some more questions coming through the chat room in the future. Thanks, everyone, for answering those questions, too. It's kind of a back and forth. We try to cater to your questions, and even if there's something that we don't get to the same week, we try to keep them coming and the answers through our hosts, as always. Nice to see you in there. And 73 from Northeastern Illinois. This is Cheryl, K9BIK.
Thanks, Cheryl. Some good questions this week, too, and I think we answered them all sufficiently. And we're looking forward to having Bob back next week. I assume he'll be here. Haven't heard different. I'm not sure where he is today. So maybe he'll tell us about it next week. Maybe he'll even have some pictures or video for us. Don, keep the hatches battened down there, my friend.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get rid of the generator, and we're going to tell ghost stories. 73 from South Mississippi in the hurricane hole. Bye.
Okay, Gordo, you and Julian hold it together out there on the left coast, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
And we look forward to seeing you as well, George. We're on 7268 right now, and I'm not sure if we're going to QSY. If we do, we'll probably QSY down a few kilohertz, so we're absolutely clear of any hurricane local nets. And you're hearing it in the background. 7268 is tuned in, turned on, and we're ready to roll. Back to you, George, for a final 73 all.
All right. Good deal, Gordo. Yeah, I noticed on the chat room somebody posted 7.263. Maybe, I don't know, just look around that area, you'll find the net. We certainly don't want to interfere with any emergency nets that are going on due to the hurricane. And it'll be gone next week, and maybe we'll have a little bit more to talk about on that. Here, I think I'm just going to have rain and wind, and probably not quite as much as Don has down there. So join us on our after-show nets. You can find them on 80 meters. It's going to be 3.847. On 40 meters, it's 7.268 or 7.263. On 20 meters, it's going to be 14.268. And for you digital people, you can catch the Echolink net on Dewdrop N conference server. That's star, DROPIN star. I didn't spell that right, did I? Star, D-O-D-R-O-P-I-N, star, or node number 355-800. And for you D-Star users, you can catch us on Reflector 14 Module C. If you don't have a D-Star radio, you can listen at WX4ADX.com. So 7-3, everyone, from Jackson, Mississippi. We look forward to seeing you again next week.